Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
And driving, and shopping, and eating, and working. Somewhere, somehow, they all got chewed up and spit back out. They don't taste like living anymore. Don't you see what it's like in this deranged, wearing blender of a world? Every day is an agonizing ordeal. Like balancing a pot of scalding water on your head while people whip your legs and butt. Oh, you never forget your senior prom. You think I'm sick? Well, the only disease I've got is modern life. A schnut-busting gauntlet of inefficiency and misery that's one long parade of letdowns, put-downs, trickle-downs, shut-outs, freeze-outs, sell-outs, numb-nuts, nick-and-puts, and nimrods. All making every day as much fun as waxing a flaming Pontiac with your tongue. Or even if you do luck into the possibility of some fleeting pleasure, like, say, if some nymphomaniac telephone operators with the muscle control of Romanian mat slappers agree to a little strip air hockey, it'll be over before it starts. Because some vowel-lacking, fetter-reeking cab jockey slams his checker up your hatchback, and the cab is owned by some pinata spank from a Santeria cult in Wacalpa who starts shaking chicken bones at you and gives you a boil on your neck so big all it needs is Michael Jordan's autograph to make it complete. And even with all this, I still drag my sorry butt off the ceiling every morning and stick my face in the reaping machine for one more day, knowing when it's time to flash the cosmic card key at those pearly gates, I won't be in the coffin anyway, because some underhanded undertaker sold my heart, pancreas, and other assorted good and plenty to that same Santeria cult. So does anybody really wonder why anybody is hanging on to by the atoms on the tips of their fingernails while life dirty dances on their digits? And is it really any wonder that I seem deranged?
Who can argue with that? Thank you for joining us today. It is 1:22, which makes it 22 minutes after the hour of 1. In this, the month of July, in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. Live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, an excursion into whimsy and amusements of all manners, shapes, fashions, forms, functions, and varieties. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Thank you for being with us. If you'd like to join us via the telephone, you can do that. I add an extra vowel, by the way, because my mom used to do that when I was a child. And I'm unclear to this day whether she did that because it was a wry sense of humor at work that I didn't really grasp as a kid, or whether she was just a hick. If you're listening, Mom, sorry, it's probably not that you're a hick. She did this thing where she would add extra vowels to things and extra syllables where they didn't belong. So, like, occasionally gasoline would become a gasoline station or can.
My mother used to say aluminium because she saw it in, like, a British movie once and she thought it sounded classy.
Well, and it's also correct, by the way. Aluminium really is the correct pronunciation. It is also the correct spelling. I'm not going to get off of the whole thing here. I say lying and fooling no one. No, aluminium. Never mind. It's aluminium actually is correct because it is part of a group of metals. Please don't call about this. Don't text about it. Just everyone get away from the keyboard right now. Back away. There's a guy named Bill Bryson who many of you know because he's written a series of books. He wrote a book called A Walk in the Woods, and he wrote a book called I'm a Stranger Here Myself, and I believe one called The Adventures of the Thunderbolt Kid. But he's a British author, and he wrote this fantastic book called A Brief History of Nearly Everything, which is his attempt to understand every branch of the hard sciences in, like, a year. Anyway, it's full of fascinating things, including a whole discussion of the aluminum-aluminium thing, where there was originally a group of metals that all shared a common suffix form. But then when it came to America, you know, as everything does, they get all warped and messed up. So we're not going to talk about it anymore. In fact, we're going to be done now. In any event, the telephone is now functional. And as we learned yesterday, this is how sad my life is. This is...
What you got going on over there? I'm having a little coughing.
A little bit of black lung? All right. You got
a beverage.
You
just carry on without me. I'll be fine.
You've got some liquid refreshment there. Maybe you should have some of that. Maybe I should turn the mic up really, really loudly while you're drinking. And then you should eat a sandwich.
Yes. All right.
in any event, as you may have discovered yesterday, if you were listening, you heard me do this. I figured out how to put the phones on hold too, which I know, like to you, this is like one of those legless guys who manages to brush his teeth, you know, or something, you know, or that guy that comes to your school and he speaks to you and he says, "Kids, just because I only have stumps doesn't mean I can't find a fulfilling life as a painter." And then he knocks out like some Bad Monet knockoff with a stick in his teeth or something. I am that guy, except with legs and arms and fully functional.
And a phone.
So I know that everybody else knows how to put a phone call on hold. You know, somebody calls you and you press the button and then they're put in the box and then you press the button. They come out of the box. You carry on your conversation. I myself just figured out yesterday how to do that on our new phone system, which really is, as I explained, and I won't give the whole thing again, but it's kind of rewiring your brain because this is different than every radio station phone system I have ever used. And phones are sort of complex anyway in ways that I will discuss in just a moment. But anyway, the phone is open, I say now for the third time, at 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us.
Of course, you encourage them to call now after telling them that it's likely they'll be put on hold.
Well, yeah, but I got things to do. Look, it's not like you go to the front of the line just because you can dial seven numbers correctly, friend. I mean, just the ability to recognize and then press a button doesn't immediately put you, you know, like ahead of all the other stuff that we got to get done. It's just life doesn't work that way. Life kind of does work that way, but I'm just saying, if, for example, like yesterday, there were numerous people, you know, trying to get on at once. You know, sometimes when we first started the show, I would just say, well, there's a flood of calls, but we're just going to have to take them one at a time, and everybody else is going to...
And we got to keep hearing the sound.
And the ringing sound kept happening, and I couldn't quite figure out how to get to the bottom of it.
So that was the first thing you mastered, was making the sound go away.
So I had to turn the ringing sound off. Now I know how to put the, you know, if we get multiple calls, I can rack them up and get to them one at a time. It really is a benefit. You're framing this as though I'm being rude, and I'm really not. What I'm saying is, before... You sons of bitches, if somebody called in while a call was already in progress, I was not clear how to bank or park or put on hold that second or third or fourth call, so it just got ignored, or it went to voicemail or something. But now, there is no call turned away. I mean, except for the ones that are bad. There's no call that will be ignored or shunned or tossed aside like yesterday's coffee filter. So I would appreciate it if you would not position this as something I am doing, you know, in a manner of jackassery.
I didn't believe that there was anything hostile or, you know, negative about it. I just thought, you know, you're telling people, hey, call us so I can put you on hold.
Please call now. Not that I will speak with you or deign to have the conversation in any way, but go to the effort all the same. In any event, it's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. You can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com, rick@rickemerson.com, or dawn@rickemerson.com. Does that actually work? It's functional?
Well, you know, I
that's a no. Okay.
No, I activated
Thank
it.
Thank you.
So it's there. It's just that I keep forgetting to go and check it, and now I realize I don't know how to log into it.
So when I asked, does it work? And you said yes.
Well, it works. I just apparently am
How do you
useless.
Know that it works if you can't activate it to check?
Because it's the internet. It's out there somewhere working by itself. There's probably a bunch of emails there waiting for me if I ever get around to, you know, actually logging in and looking at it.
So the dawn@rickemerson.com email account is sort of like, it's sort of like a Jehovah to you. You can't see it or touch it. You don't have any proof that it actually is in existence or does any of the things it's supposed to do.
It's like a place I'm setting for Elijah.
You
and
well done. Barukata. All right. In any event, well, you can email Dawn in a figurative sort of sense, I guess. You can also chat at rickemerson.com. rickemerson.com is where you could do that. Coming up today, we have a penis watch today and a clergy watch. Not the same thing, by the way. Clergy watch, penis watch coming up. We have another installment of the greatest songs ever made. And Dawn Taylor will also favor us with another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's pop culture authority answers the magical question, are Oreos and Hydrox the same thing? Which is stolen from the other? Are Hydrox, in fact, just a clone of Oreos? That's coming up later in the day as part of Pop Culture Authority. We'll also talk with our good friend Greg Nibbler about the LeBron James story, which I understand is like a big deal. I know that's a thing everybody cares about, and I'm not trying to slight that or minimize it, but I think we all know that I am not the man to address that story. In fact, there's no one in this room currently who's able to talk about the LeBron James thing with any, I mean, without just sounding like a complete and utter mouth breather. So we'll toss it over to Greg Nibbler here in just a bit. Before we do anything else, Don Taylor is working on the following stories as we begin today's program.
More workers are packing their lunch every day. A man's hand is blown off in an illegal fireworks accident. And an adult woman posed as a boy to date teenage girls.
All right, then. Okay. I have nothing to add to that except to say that I'm going to take a moment here and I'm going to have a swig of crisp, refreshing Viso. So everybody's just going to have to hold on a second.
My, that sounds refreshing.
Ah, listen to that. You know what it is? That's the clarity and power of the RE20. Microphone, Dawn. That is the finest audio transduction device known to man. It is only through this Electro Voice RE20 that people are really able to hear with absolute clarity and precision and crispness exactly how wonderful that tastes. That's right.
I myself am drinking Coke Zero, which is currently they're having a special deal that Coke products, two 20-ounce bottles for $2, so they're $1 a piece. And I bought two bottles of Coke Zero at Plaid Pantry, and then Susie, the manager of the Plaid Pantry, said, "Do you have your punch card?" And I said, "No, I didn't know there was one." And she told me excitedly that there's this punch card that after you buy like 10 or 20 bottles of Coke or something, you get a free T-shirt. And they have the T-shirt hanging there at display.
Is the T-shirt hideous?
It's horrible.
It's like something that no one would ever want to wear.
It's a Coca-Cola red T-shirt with the Coca-Cola logo on it with what look like two flip-flops on either side of it, because I guess it's summer. And so then on top of me not having the punch card, she said, "Oh, well, we were supposed to get the punch cards today, but we don't have them yet. What I'll do is I will make a note on your receipt."
Wow.
"And if you bring the receipt back, but you have to come to me, because I'm the man." And I'm like, I don't even want the T-shirt. I don't want to do any of this.
She's actually trying to get you to take the more inefficient and troublesome route for a thing you don't want.
Yeah. So now I'm carrying this damn receipt around in my wallet, and I'm almost afraid to go to the Plaid Pantry because I have to get this punch card that I don't want.
That's the thing. That is the thing about it is there are places that you have to quit going there because you have had, and this is like, you know, it's a whole Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of a thing, where you have had some awful experience that is only awful to you, and no one else would really understand why it is that you can't go back or what has happened that is so troubling. It's like how I can just, you know, I talked about that the barber I went to a few weeks ago that was drunk, or at least smelled strongly of alcohol. I mean, he smelled like a distillery. And I only noticed this as he had the street razor out giving me, and he's, you know, because he's old school. It's not like a salon. I mean, it's a barber shop. It's like this bad, you know, there's like a bad sofa with springs that jab you in the ass when you sit down. And there's like Dave Brubeck or some crap coming out of the radio. And there's a guy going, "So you think the Yankees are going to go all the way this year?" Or, you know, whatever. And like copies of fishing magazines or something on the table. And the guy gives the best haircut I have ever had in my life. I mean, hands down, it's an astonishingly good haircut, because my hair is pretty, you know, it's not like when you have really long hair where you can get away with almost anything. You know, I had hair, you've seen these photos, a lot of you, I had hair like to my belt for a lot of my life. And it's like, the thing about that is, I'm not saying it looked good as such, but I'm saying there's a finite number of moving parts when you have really long hair. There's only so many things that can go wrong with it because the hair is so heavy and long, it holds itself down, and you know, what are you going to do? But when your hair gets shorter, you know, you got to actually, like, figure out, okay, what am I going to do with this so I don't look like a goon when I leave the house? This guy gives a fantastic haircut. But the thing is, he talks. He talks to me like a cabbie on speed. And there's no way to convey to him without just saying, "Friend, shut it," that I don't see. And even now, I sound like a jerk. I sound like a jackass. And I don't mean to be that way. I don't dislike him in any way. But the thing is, first of all, this is not even what I was going to talk about. But first of all, when I go to get a haircut, this does tie into why, if I sound a little cranky today, I apologize. I should have said that like 20 minutes ago when I was telling people, "Call so I can put you on hold. Come to think of it, don't call. Come to think of it, just leave me alone." It's really not how I intended that to sound. So if I sound like I'm a little on edge, I had as Ned Beatty said in the movie The Toy, I had a difficult morning. So we'll talk about that here in a second.
You've been so cheerful up to this point.
Shut up.
It's like you forgot you had a bad morning, and now you remember, and now the crankiness has returned.
See, but you're just saying that either to be sarcastic or nice, and I can't quite tell, because you were pointing out last hour during Legion of News that I sounded like I was in a bad mood. Yeah, when I was talking about when I was saying screw the earth, you know.
Now I don't recycle,
which is true.
That didn't seem any different than most days,
normal,
really.
Bubbly self. I guess I shouldn't even talk about the barber. I should explain. If I sound a little bitchy today, I apologize. Do you remember last week when we had that news story about if you have one thing that rattles you in the morning or one bad moment?
Yeah.
That it can ruin your entire day.
It just ricochets through your brain and keeps firing things.
And we found out that that's not just a thing that is your perception. It is actually the case that if you have something bad happen to you, it basically causes this ongoing, exponential, self-perpetuating ripple effect in your synapses, where they fire off, I mean, I don't know what it's called, but it's like a bad energy,
There's spikes, and each spike fires off 30 more spikes, and there's 30 spikes that come off of each of those spikes.
And so it just becomes this thing where all day long you've got bad vibes echoing around in your head. And that's why, you know, when they say you get up on the wrong side of the bed, it's like you get up on the wrong side of the bed, you walk out and you stub your toe on something, you know, and then as you manage to set your hair on fire, you know, while you're toasting some bread, that'll ruin your entire day. And it's not like all, I mean, it's not just all in your imagination, though it is in your brain.
So what happened to you this morning?
I had that happen this morning. So, I slept pretty well. Yesterday, I got the air conditioner cranked up because I'm an American, and as soon as it hits like 74 degrees outside, I get ready. I clean the vents. I make sure the Freon is, you know, hooked up. I make sure everything's plugged in correctly. I double check all the fuses or the circuit breaker. I mean, 75 degrees, air conditioner goes on. Which is just the happiest moment of my life. Can I just tell you how ecstatically, unbelievably giddy it makes me just with life and existence and all things when I turn on the air conditioner and cold air begins to come out. And look, I have been unemployed for the last 7 months, and it doesn't matter. I don't give a damn. If I have to sell my bone marrow to run the air conditioner, I will do it. It doesn't. I don't care how much it costs. I don't care if it's melting something that belongs to a cute, cuddly animal in Antarctica. I don't give a rip. I don't care if I have to sell my own feet. The air conditioner is the greatest, and I would stand by this. The air conditioner is the greatest device in the history of human creation. We've never come up with anything better than that. The richest man in the world, 500 years ago, if it was hot, guess what? It was freaking hot, and you just lived with it, and that was it. And you could have some busty maiden come in and wave a palm frond at you. Maybe, I guess, if you had access to all those things, and if that's what, you know, what you're into, didn't make it any cooler. You got a little breeze, which is blowing around the hot air. I mean, that's all that it is. You know, the air conditioner gives you the godlike ability. See, you say I'm in a bad mood, and I guess I kind of am, but talking about the air conditioner makes me happy. It gives you an almost superhuman ability to, wait for it, control the weather. And not just to control the weather anywhere, to control the weather in your home. I mean, normally, I mean, it's like that. That's a thing that only deities and Jews can do. But you can control the weather no matter where you are if you have an air conditioner. And I mean, it is miraculous. It's like a light switch. And I'm not stoned, by the way. You know, the idea that there's a miniature sun in your house and you can just go, well, I'm tired of the dark. And you press a button, it's light. And I mean, unless you wanted to have a fire near you all the time, it's not like you were able to do that if you were a pharaoh. So I had the air conditioner going all night long. It was like it was a crisp 72 in the bedroom. I woke up, cool air coming out of the vents. I'm just thinking to myself, boy, life is fantastic. Life is good. I can't wait. And I, you know, and I'm tired and I get up and I walk into my home office. Yeah, you know, just down the hall, and I got all my, because I'm an anal retentive OCD freak, I got all my clothing laid out, you know, for the night before, because I'm 5, and I'm getting ready to put on my pants, but of course, what do? Reach into the, I got this closet where I store a bunch of my, you know, my stuff for work and whatever. Also in the closet, all my Vizo. I don't store it in the fridge, because I prefer my Vizo with ice, and so I have a whole morning ritual, like all junkies do, where I get the glass, I get the ice, I drop the ice into the glass from just the right height so it rattles around and makes a pleasing noise. Then I open the can of Vizo, Vigor. Then I pour it in and I watch it splash playfully over the cubes. And then I don't drink it right away. No, I savor the withdrawal for just a few minutes longer while it chills to the appropriate temperature. And then I lift it and I swirl it around. And then I reflect upon the glory that is this human parade. And then I lift it to my lips and I drink. And then all is good. Except for this morning, when I opened the closet door and I reached inside, and there's no Visa.
Oh.
And I did that thing of, like, reaching around, like, because the light burned out last night, so I can't really see. So I'm reaching around and stuff with my hand, like, there's got to be one back here. Hold on a second. That's for the love of... All right, Emerson, let's hold it together. Let's not panic. I bet you have half a Visa in the fridge. That's probably the case. Hold on a second. And I walk into the kitchen and I open the refrigerator. I feel so much better talking about this. You've got to remind me of this going forward. This is a thing that... I have to, you know, retrain myself on every time I start come back into the show. That if I'm ever in a bad mood, let's just make a pact right now. And I'll get back to the story. But whenever let's make a pact right now. If it seems like one of us is in a bad mood, you got to just eventually come out with it.
Okay.
Because you're gonna then you'll feel better, and then the audience gets to share in your misery, and then you don't start the show by telling people don't call. I can't be bothered. But I'm reaching around in the closet at home, and I'm like, okay, there's a Visa. No, it's not here. Okay, I'll look in the fridge. Maybe there's, because, you know, I drink half a can sometimes at night, you know, or whatever. I open the fridge. Okay, it's not in the fridge. Is it in the door? Have I put it in the crisper? No, it's not in the crisper. The freezer? No. Did I leave a Visa in the car? And I go out, and I'm actually looking in the little, like, drink holder thing in the car. And then, no, but that's not even the worst part.
Under the couch. Maybe one rolled under the couch.
Here's the moment this morning, though. This is how my day started off. So here's the moment when I realized, and Alex from Visa, by the way, is going to be our in-studio guest next week. He'll be in this is a coincidence, but he'll be in the studio next week to talk to us about some exciting things happening in the world of Visa.
And we had some discussion with Greg about getting a little mini fridge.
That's right.
So it's all coming together.
This can't happen ever again. So here's, though, the moment when it all turned on me. I went back in the house after not finding Visa in the cupboard, in the fridge, or in the car. I then go back to the cupboard because that's what you do when you've lost something. You have to check your pocket 1,000 times for your car keys and so forth. I open the closet, and this is when you realize you are just a junkie for something. In this case, caffeine and Visa. I am then just going through places where I know it cannot possibly be, like the sock drawer. There's no way.
But what if there had been? That would have been just delightful.
There is no... I mean, it would have been great, but come on. There is no conceivable method.
Toolbox. Maybe it's in the toolbox. I may have been drinking one while I was looking for a screwdriver, and I put it in the toolbox.
Maybe, I mean, could it be inside this locked valise in which I keep my high school debate team trophies?
Dog food bag. Maybe there's one in the dog food bag.
And so I'm hunting around. I mean, just like looking through, I swear to God, the low point today was when I was looking through the hamper where I keep my dirty boxer shorts.
Sure. Sure, that's
wondering.
Someone might keep a Visa there. Maybe Laura was hiding
God
one from
damn.
You.
Damn. And I mean, it's like, and I realize that I'm glad that Visa comes in a sealed can because if it was like a powder, that's when I would have been snorting sheetrock, you know, or something, or just boiling the cotton in the top of, you know, like a medicine, like a pill bottle to try to get a little something out of there. Jesus. So then it's like you've got the crankiness of this, you know, my ritual has been broken. And, and you're probably OCD in many ways, Dawn.
Yeah, I think.
many folks out there know what I'm talking about when I say OCD. And so my morning ritual has been ruined. You know, there's no getting that. And that's the thing is, no matter when you get the drug, in this case, the Visa, it doesn't matter. Because it's like the ritual, which is like 40% of it, has been ruined. You're never getting that back.
Yeah, I ran out of like half and half. I use either half and half or cream in my coffee. But there's milk. There's some whole milk. And it's not the same.
No.
And so every day for the last 4 or 5 days, it's just been like, have a cup of coffee. It's just not right.
Right. Yeah.
It just isn't right.
So I'm like, oh, God damn. So then I have to put on my pants. I have to get dressed. I have to get in the car. And before I can do anything else, because, you know, there's nothing else can be accomplished until I have the Visa. I can't possibly just get ready and then come to work and get one on the way. Because the ritual has to be maintained at all costs, right? You know, you can't.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I have step A has to come before B. even if it means going to Z, which is leave the house, and then going back to A. So I put on my pants, I get dressed, I put on my sunglasses, because the sun, before I've had my caffeine, is the brightest thing on earth anyway. And I walk outside, my hair's all effed up, I haven't shaved, I reek, you know, I get in the car, drive into the stupid goddamn life, stupid oxygen, everything is kill me. As I get to the plant pantry, I'm behind a guy paying for cigarettes with pennies. I mean, it's just it's the worst thing on earth. So I finally get home, but then, of course, what do I do? I can't drink it out of the can on the way. I got to wait till I get home. I got to get home, and then what do I have to do? I have to get the glass. I have to get the ice cubes all over again. Different ice cubes, because the other ones have melted. And then I have to stop 800 or 900 times and go, God damn, I'm crazy. And so I finally get the Vizo. I finally get the Vizo, you know, into the glass. I have it, some of it, and I think, okay, all right, Emerson, we can face the day. Let's walk back out of the kitchen and just deal with things. I walk back out of the kitchen where I see that the goddamn dog, Max, who I love, and who's, you know, he's a great little furry pal to have around. And so I should say that I'm not, I love my dogs. I really do. But goddamn, man, I walk into the kitchen and the dog.
And he's drinking a Vizo.
He's hoarded my Vizo. He's become the Jennifer Jason Leigh to my Jason Patrick in Rush. I walk into the kitchen and the dog, while I'm gone, has managed to pull down from the counter a nearly complete large pizza that I purchased last night and didn't really eat. I had a single slice of it last night, and it was from Di Nicola's on Powell, who I love.
Yeah,
he pulled it down onto the floor, this entire... I mean, it was missing... I had one slice. He somehow can... The dog is 6 inches tall. The counter is 5 feet. There's no chairs! I don't know how he... I don't know how he did it. It makes no sense at all. So I'm walking to the kitchen, and he's just... And the rest of the pizza that he has not eaten has fallen face down on the floor. And he's licked all the back of it, of course. You know, so what do I have to do? And, of course, you know, even if I weren't OCD, I have to throw it away. You can't... Even I... And I've eaten things out of the back of my car. I will not... There's no way. So I have to throw it away. That was it right there. I mean, it's like there was no getting the day back at that point. So I feel so much better. I apologize for sounding bitchy at the top of the show. I didn't mean to sound like I was coming off as the jackass, which I probably did. And bitching about the barber.
It makes my whole punch card thing seem so petty now at this point. It's like that was what irritated me today. That was nothing compared to the sheer hell you went through.
So if it sounded like I was disproportionately angry about, like, you know, nature last hour for Legion of News, or the barber, which happened like a month ago, by the way, the phone today. That's how my day started. The 1-2 punch of the no veto, the leaving the house. And, you know, and the thing, people with a caffeine addiction know that the caffeine thing, you know, like coffee or whatever, that's a serious, I mean,
oh, yeah.
People who don't drink coffee, I mean, I don't get it, but it's like you can't understand, just like I can't understand what it's like to try to quit smoking. It's a big deal, and then the pizza, which I was looking forward to eating tonight, because you know the same with pizza, you finish it like, oh, it's going to be good tomorrow.
Yeah,
little bastard. I hope he enjoyed it. Boy, you know, that's the only comfort I might have is that dog has a food fetish. So hopefully, you know, he did get some pleasure out of stealing my food and then eating it. I don't even know how he got it.
As long as, you know, he doesn't make himself sick, because, you know...
Oh,
you know,
no, that was the other thing, is
David Letterman's dog died from eating a ham.
No, No, this dog, you know, the first month I had him, he ate half a pound of Baker's chocolate, so he's impervious. He ate thumbtacks one time. He ate a pound of grapes. He can't be killed. He's like the mayor of Sunnydale. But that was the other thing. I go into the bathroom to shave. I come out, the dog has... excreted all over the kitchen floor, because, you know, his morning ritual of waiting until later to eat has been ruined. He's eaten, so why not just, you know,
sure, why not?
Why not just go? And he's older, so, you know, whatever. So he can't really help himself, I guess. And what a Jesus, goddamn life, stupid crap. All right, so that was my day. That was my morning. All right, I'm glad we could share these things. This is why I don't need therapy when I have a job. You know, when I have a radio show, I can just come out and go, and then. I mean, and I told her that I leave the seat up sometimes and just get used to it. Jesus, God almighty. All right, let's do this. Let's go to the news desk. And right as we get into the news desk, Dawn, I will get ready to get a hold of Greg Nibbler.
Okay.
So he can talk to us about LeBron James. Coming up later on, friends and neighbors, we'll have a penis watch, clergy watch, the greatest songs ever made. And today's pop culture authority answers the question, are Hydrox cookies just a knockoff of Oreos? Let's all take a deep cleansing breath, though, before we do that, shall we? Let's have a little moment of zen.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Patricia J. Dye, a 31-year-old woman, was jailed after she allegedly posed as a 14-year-old boy in order to lure a teenage girl into a relationship. According to Warren County, Ohio police, Dye, who is 4'11" and weighs 120 pounds, posed as a 14-year-old boy and used the aliases Matt Abrams or Matt Lewis to engage in relationships with teen girls. She reportedly began dating a 16-year-old from Springboro, Ohio, even allowing the runaway to live with her for 3 days Collie's Motel.
I'm sorry. Why do all these hot stories have to be ruined by the fact that the girls are underage, thus meaning that I can't go, ooh, ooh, la, la, or whatever it is guys say?
Ooh, la, la? Not much.
No,
really.
No, that's only in Faces songs. No, not that. That reminded me of the phrase hubba hubba, which I think somebody typed to me on a chat thing earlier for reasons that I chose not to investigate. Where does that come from? Why would you ever, how even in terms of like phonetics would the phrase hubba hubba ever come into existence?
I don't know.
That doesn't make
any sense at
all.
You jot that down for a pop culture authority.
Yeah, maybe.
It's one of those phrases like 23 skidoo that people just don't say anymore.
I just don't understand where that came from. All right, I'm sorry. All of these stories where it's like some chick pretending to be a woman so that she can get it on with presumably hot girls, and you're thinking, wow, this is the best story I've heard all day, and then it's ruined because the girls are all underage, which means it's like the child raping or something, so I can't, so we have to just sort of approach it journalistically. If the girl was 18 and hot, you'd be, this is the best story of the day. All right, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Where are we? Oh, yes. Dye lives with her parents, who are elderly and disabled. And yet she had this girl living with her at a motel at one point. So investigators say the victim had run away from home, which was deemed unlivable by authorities. She stated she had no clue that Matt Abrams was actually a woman in disguise. Her mother even believed Dye was a teenage boy.
I always wonder about this whenever there's these sort of boys don't cry type things where somebody's undercover as another gender for however long. It just seems so implausible to me that you wouldn't be able to spot that. I guess maybe if you don't, you don't. But I mean,
well, I read the book about the actual Boys Don't Cry,
the Tina Brandon
thing, Brandon Tina thing, and ostensibly their makeout sessions and their sex were all done in the dark,
above the neck,
rather furtively and such.
Furtively,
but it's also questionable whether the girl that was dating Brandon Tina didn't know.
I mean, it just, it seems like the sort of thing you might suss out. You're like, you might put one and one and one and one and one eventually together and go, hold on now. All right. Well, fair enough.
A second girl has reportedly come forward stating she and Dye had dated for about a week and she knew him as a boy. Dye was booked into Warren County Jail and charged with unlawful sexual conduct, contributing to the delinquency of a minor, and importuning. She remained jailed Tuesday in lieu of $100,000 bond. Investigators are looking for possible other victims.
Right.
And there's a photo.
Now, is this a photo of the perpetrator or the victim?
That wouldn't be
of the victim, I guess. No, this is no. There's no way. There's no way you would not think this was a girl. It's totally a girl. In the mugshot where she is presumably looking exactly as she was when they arrested her, This is just some butch-looking girl. It's just that she just looks like a tomboy.
Tina Brandon did a pretty damn good job of pulling it off.
I haven't seen any of the real photos ever of how that of how that came together.
No, she did look like a boy.
Hey, let me ask you this about it. I can't figure out if Hilary Swank is hot or not. Hot is the wrong word. She's not hot like supermodel hot, but I can't figure out if she's the good looking in the generally accepted Western sense.
Well, she's got the big horse face.
She's got George Thorogood's mouth. I mean, there's no getting around that. But I remember seeing her in The Next Karate Kid and thinking, hey, now, who's that?
And she was on 90210 for a while, and she was quite adorable.
Right, I forgot that. Well remembered.
But she also did that sort of like weird, creepy, got really, really super thin to like try and have super sharp cheekbones that you can slice cheese with.
Yeah.
And now she just looks creepy.
Yeah, I'm unclear, but she, you know, there's certain women like that I can never quite tell if they're good looking or not. It's like they're straddling a middle line somehow.
Well, there's this actress, Clea DuVall.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine described her and he said that his reaction to her, he wasn't sure if he found her unattractive, but he just had this, he said, I can't remember exactly how I put it, but it involves something like he just wanted to go off and masturbate and cry.
Okay.
I'm attracted to her, but I feel kind of creepy about it.
He wanted to, but the pleasuring would be because the crying would be because because the pleasure came to her and he felt wrong about that because she's sort of weird looking.
Yes.
I'm looking at pictures of Clea DuVall right now. You know what she looks like? She sort of looks like. She kind of looks like what's her guts from My So-Called Life, Angela Chase.
Yeah. Only kind of weirdly coarser.
Yeah, but you got to tell me your name because it's going to bug me now forever. See, why do I not know that? I've known that my whole life. I knew that somebody's screaming that screaming it at the radio
of
right
course.
Now. But you know, but the chick from My So-Called Life.
Yeah.
God damn. That's one of those things where I think I'm going senile because in what world would I not know her name?
I know. I do the same. Claire Danes.
Claire Danes. Claire Danes. So she kind of looks like Claire Danes mixed with what's her name? Katie Sackhoff a little bit. But then
– And a Pomeranian.
And a Pomeranian. Of course, all these photographs I'm looking at, all these – the Clay DuVall photos to pick up, they're all like where she's got weird raccoon eye makeup going on. So I don't know what that's all about. Well, in any event. So – but yeah, so blah, 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 whatever. Getting it on, teenage boy, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. Clay DuVall. There you go. Let's just move forward. Let's do one more. And meanwhile, I will get a hold of Greg Nibbler to talk to us about the LeBron James thing because I'm tired of not knowing what the hell I'm talking about in terms of the story.
An old house in downtown Orlando, Florida.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's it. You're busy doing something else. I forgot that it was a Florida story.
You knew I was busy. Hold on. In downtown where?
I went Orlando, Florida.
Okay, there you go. All right.
Is now all a buzz. After a church planning to tear it down discovered a massive beehive in the wall. Richard Martinica, an entomologist from All Florida Bee Removal, said the 500-pound hive was approximately 7 feet high with about 50,000 honeybees in it.
Jesus.
The home cannot be torn down until the hive is removed and the bees are killed.
You can never fully remove the hive. You know, they stay there forever.
Although in some areas bee populations are decreasing, this is not the case in Florida. We're concerned about our honeybee population, Martinica said. But what most people don't know, our honeybee population is exploding, largely because of the African, or some call, killer bee.
See, here's the thing about the bees vanishing, is that I don't believe that. I think that's just a thing people are making up. I mean, what evidence do we have that bees... I mean, is there a guy who counts bees somewhere?
There are people who count bees.
I know, but
just
I mean...
as there are people who count fish.
Here's what I mean by that. I understand that there are entomologists. There are people who specialize in this. But have we heard from any of those folks?
Yes.
By which I mean... No, but you're not letting me... Let me finish the goddamn question.
All right.
Give me my viso! I guess my point is every person I've heard come forward and say, well, you know, bees are vanishing. It's never been a guy who's from, like, the United States Department of Entomology. It's some idiot from Eugene who heard on the Art Bell show that something bad is happening with bees. Or, you know, some guy, you know, it's some dick on a message board somewhere who's taken a break from talking about, you know, Morgellons to describe, you know, the fact that, well, you know, you can track a population by the health of its bees and honeybees in America. It's never the actual scientific source themselves reporting that bees are vanishing. I have never in my life heard or read one actual scientist from, like, you know, a real agency say that the bees are gone. Because it seems like that's a thing that would have affected us, like, now, because flowers would have stopped blooming.
Well, it is affecting us now.
How?
Well, hives are being abandoned. Flowers are not getting pollinated. It can affect crops. Our entire ecosystem is dependent on things like bees. It affects us.
You've just done that thing. You've just done that rhetorical. You've done that Air America trick just now. You've pulled a Maddow. Where it sounds like what you're saying makes sense. And by the way, to be fair, this is also a Limbaugh. You've done that rhetorical thing just now of answering what seemed to be my question, but you just answered something I didn't ask. I wasn't asking if all bees vanished, would it matter or why? I'm saying none of those things you described are happening, though. Flowers haven't stopped blooming. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying if bees vanished, would it harm us? I know what would happen.
Is it harming it? Well, of course it is.
No. But see, you're saying, well, flowers won't bloom. And I'm saying, well, that's theoretically if bees vanished. But is that happening now? Have flowers stopped blooming?
I don't know.
You're looking on the internet for the answer again, aren't you?
Well, I can tell you that Jeff Pettis, a research leader at the USDA Bee Lab.
The Bee Lab.
Says that the bees are dying off and the prognosis for honeybees does not look good.
So the prognosis does not look good for honeybees, says the guy from the Bee Lab.
Right.
What does that mean, the prognosis does not look good?
At least as many bee colonies died off over the winter as they have in the last few years, possibly more than in years past, thanks to something called colony collapse disorder.
You don't know what you're talking about right now, do you? You're just reading this.
I'm just telling you what the guy from the Bee Lab
said.
And
don't misunderstand. I don't want to feel like I'm interrogating you. Something. Not like I expect you to have the answer to this, Dawn Taylor. Not like I am demanding that you. I guess what I'm saying is that. While I understand theoretically, yes, if bees were to vanish, I know how the chain of life works. The circle of poo begins with flowers, and it goes to bees and to honey, and whatever. All I'm saying is, all of the effects of that, the consequences, are themselves, from what I can see, not evident. In other words, it's like when people say, "Well, you know, without trees, we won't be able to breathe." We're not without trees. There are trees everywhere. This place is lousy with trees. We couldn't have more trees if our life depended on it. So that's all I'm saying. And it just sounds like the bees had a hard winter. Guess what? So did I. So get in line. It's 503-505-6964. I'm really not in a bad mood anymore, by the way. Okay. I know it may sound that way. Let's see. I'm just getting hold of Greg Nibbler here. Let's see.
I personally dislike stinging insects a great deal. So the less bees, personally, I think the better. But we do need them.
I dig bees. No, that's the I love
bees. Oh, bees
that's
are fascinating.
Bees. I love bees.
They give
me
the heebie-jeebies.
I have no. I used to have kind of a spider thing. I don't much anymore. I'm not that afraid of spiders anymore. But I got to tell you, I love bees, ants, anything like that. They're fascinating. They really are just amazing.
I learned something really interesting the other day reading Chelsea Kane's second novel, Heartsick. She had a scene where a bee was bumping against the glass, and this entomologist guy said, "Oh, that's because it's old glass. There's an old house, and it's old glass." And apparently, bees see by registering UV light.
Right.
And remember when we were kids growing up, and you'd see bees bumping against glass? Yeah. They'd be in the house, and you don't see that anymore because glass for houses now all comes with UV filters on it.
So
the bees don't see the light, and they realize it's a barrier, so they don't bump into the glass.
But they don't see the old windows.
Yeah,
that's fascinating. All right, no, it really is, actually.
Yeah.
All right, let's go ahead. Let's do one more here. I know we've got a bunch of sound to get through today.
Okay.
So let's do one more story here, and then we will talk LeBron James with Greg Nibbler of Fun Employment Radio.
Well, let's do one with a little bit of sound. A young man with plans to report to the Marine Corps in September lost his left hand and a large portion of his thigh after two powerful M1000 firecrackers exploded in his pocket. We reported this earlier on Legion of News. He was surrounded by a crowd of people at his neighborhood 4th of July party. 19-year-old Josh Myers took his hand, covered the front left pocket of his pants, and fell to the ground after realizing that the M1000s in his pocket were about to explode.
It's really not like throwing yourself on a grenade in NAMM, though. I mean, it just doesn't have the same ring of, it doesn't have the same sort of heroic elan to it. Let's get a little bit of sound from this guy. So I think this is... this is, I believe, his cousin, followed by a guy named Mo, as they describe.
All stories should have a guy named Mo.
And who is the protagonist in this story? The main character. His name is what?
Josh Myers.
All right. So this is the story of one Josh Myers, as told by his cousin and a guy named Mo.
I look over his back pocket, sparkling up. saw one go off. He started running, going for the hose, ran into the front yard, and then next thing I know, boom, boom. I heard screaming, and I ran up to him. Somebody got on the phone and called 911. Me and Mo automatically went to his side.
Mo?
I'm in my dining room, and I already hear my cousin screaming that his hand's gone, and when I got out there, it was really gone, and he was laying on my porch, so I laid right next to him, held him the whole time.
So there you go. Life. The questions that I have about this story are just, they are almost innumerable. First of all, he had these things in his pocket, and then he realized they were about to go off. I wonder how he realized that. Like, did he hear the fuse? Did he feel the burning of the fuse in his pocket? Was there smoke from the fuse? Because when they're in a pocket, I don't picture them in the pocket with the fuse hanging out and trailing along the ground. If I gave you a firecracker and you stuck it in your pocket,
yeah.
To get it lit, first of all, seems like the flame has to be way down in your pants.
He said flames from other fireworks in his back pocket. So apparently he had fireworks in all of his pockets.
Was he laden with fireworks like some sort of a living Christmas tree?
Apparently so. And then his back pocket somehow got set on fire, which kind of makes you wonder if he did have something dangling out and somebody like set it off as a joke.
Hey, watch this thing we're gonna do. Hey, Mo, check this out.
And then he realized he had the M1000s in his front pocket, which, as it says in the story, each firecracker is equal to about a quarter stick of dynamite.
That's my next.
Which is when he put his hands over it, like, maybe if I hold them really close to my thighs, they won't go off.
This is like the Daffy Duck school of stopping the gun from going off by inserting your finger into the barrel. This is my next question. Every guy within the sound of my voice knows what I'm about to say. Growing up, I think it was Wes Anderson who made this comment that there are three things young boys love: fireworks, piranha, and petrified wood. And when you are growing up, you're fascinated with all three of those things. And some of it you outgrow, some of it you don't. Every guy knows that an M80 is equal to blank of a stick of fire stick of dynamite, and that an M1000 is equal to blank of a stick of dynamite. But here's the thing: it's all the same. What does that say? Is it a quarter stick of dynamite? Is that what it says? Yeah, that's the same thing they always tell us in M80. Well, you know, an M80 is a quarter stick of dynamite. This can't all be true. They can't all be a quarter stick of dynamite. In fact, really, I question whether any of these are a quarter stick of isn't dynamite what they used to actually, you know, like blow up dams and whatnot,
yes,
or what they did back when?
I believe they still do.
We're talking about the same dynamite, right? Yeah. The Alfred Nobel stuff that goes bang and knocks down buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems implausible to me that you could, in fact, I mean, even now in these liberal times and, on Indian reservations and so forth, that you could, they would just sell you something that was a quarter stick of dynamite as like a children's toy. Admittedly, one that, has the potential to remove your arm or whatever. So I don't know where we even verify that or how I find that out. But that is one of those things that every guy knew for a fact, not unlike how long the gum stays in your stomach after it's swallowed growing up. But I just, saying it out loud as an adult, it rings completely implausible to me. So at some point, I want someone to let us know about this. You got the, if you know the answer to this, that we're going to be on the phone with Greg here in a second. But as we found out yesterday, I know how to put calls on hold. So it's 503-505-6964 if you can answer the, if you can definitive, I'll tell you, and I'll go one better. If you can definitively answer, and by definitively, I don't mean it's like a thing that your friend like Ray Ray told you. If you can definitively answer the, is a M1000 or M80 or whatever a quarter stick of dynamite, I'll give you something from the Rick Emerson pile of gigaws over here to my immediate right. So it's 503-505-6964. In the meantime, let me do this. If I can get a hold of Greg Nibbler here to talk LeBron James. I told him I would come at 1:45, so I'm right on schedule.
Yes.
Awesome. That's just playing the game I know I can play. So he'll already be drunk at the Cirrus.
Hello.
Hey, Greg Nibbler. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm calling late. I'm not interrupting anything, am I?
No,
No, you're not.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio, which can be heard at funemploymentradio.com. So here's how we're going to do this. The last day or so, and then I woke up this morning and I was checking the news and looking at the Google alerts and trends and whatever. And on Google Trends, you can search like the most frequently searched items and phrases and things people are looking up. One of which, by the way, two days ago, I meant to talk about this. One of the most frequently searched phrases on Google Trends, and I'm not making this up, I swear to God, was, "Why is my mom so hot?" Which is just so like disturbing in ways I can't even. But for the last few days, and then today, it was everywhere. It was all LeBron James. And I don't know anything about that story. So here's what we'll do. Dawn, do you have a LeBron James story?
Behind you on the printer.
So I'm going to give this to you, and I will have Dawn read this LeBron James story, but then Greg will actually sort of translate and interpret the story and tell us why it matters and what's really going on. So, Dawn, go ahead and just read a bit of the story, first couple paragraphs, and then Greg will sort of he'll make it explicable to all of us.
A LeBron James move from Cleveland to Miami appears increasingly likely as the clock counts down to his decision. Numerous reports Thursday morning said James is likely to join Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh with the Miami Heat, a development that positions the team as an immediate NBA contender.
All right, Greg Nibbler, I understand LeBron James is, he's a great player and he's, everything that he's good at what he does. But why the disproportionate interest in the story? Why is it such a big deal?
Okay, well, LeBron James is he's the best player in the NBA, probably one of the best players since Jordan. And he's from the Ohio area, so he's been playing for Cleveland for about 7 years. And his contract is up, and he has yet to sign with anyone. So it's kind of unprecedented that a big player like that would not sign. And the thing is, he's been making a huge deal about this, pretty much turning it into an ego fest for him, about what team he's going to go to.
Oh, is it
five teams?
It's sort of like he's been, I don't know where I'm going to go. You have to wait and
exactly.
See. Does somebody want to make me an
exactly.
offer? All right.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly it. And so all of these cities are vying for him because of what an economic impact he'll have on the area. So they did a study. If he goes to the New York Knicks, they're saying he could make $1 billion. Is what this estimate, this marketing study said.
Wait, he could make...
If he goes to New York.
He could make $1 billion for New York or for the team or for himself?
For himself.
Wow.
And make just that much for the city.
Although, on the other hand, it's also saying that if he goes with Miami, that could actually cost him millions of dollars in potential salary.
It'll cost him, I think it's like $30 million. He can get paid more if he stays with Cleveland. But if he stays there, he's never going to win anything.
Is that one of the motivating things? It's like, because you see these guys all the like Karl Malone was like this, where Karl Malone, when he left the Jazz, he went to the Lakers. And the whole thing was he played for the Jazz forever and was a great player, but he just didn't, no championship. And it was such a big deal to, he wanted to be on a championship team.
Essentially, that's what the speculation is. Because if he stays with Cleveland, it's going to be all about money. And if he goes to Chicago, it'll probably be for winning. If he goes to Miami, it'll be for winning. But that's what the big thing is. And essentially, Cleveland is going to be screwed if he leaves, like the city of Cleveland. Have you seen the video that the Cleveland City Council made?
No, is it?
I don't know if you...
Is it? Please tell me it's just them begging him to stay.
That's what... It's a take on We Are the World, only it's Please Stay LeBron.
Okay, I am and they have, looking that up right now.
Yeah, see if you can find it. I know they were taking it down for a while because it was so horrible, but I'm sure somebody still has it out there. I mean, it's embarrassing for everyone involved. But it's awful, and it's awesome. Yeah, you got to find it. They're talking about the Cleveland area. I mean, they're going to lose potentially hundreds of millions of dollars if he leaves and the Cleveland Cavaliers suck again.
All right,
like,
so I'm
worse than you do now.
I am looking this up now. It's Please Stay LeBron. Let's see. So I'm gonna. This is this content has been removed. Boy, what are the odds of that? All right, so now
yeah.
Well, now it's a quest. Now I have to find it. So that answers Dawn's question from earlier. Because you could tell that Dawn and I just have we have no idea what we're talking about, because the first thing out of Dawn's mouth when we were discussing this morning was, well, how good can he be if he's playing in Cleveland? I mean, really, come on. But he's very good, apparently, the best in the NBA, and that he's in Cleveland because that is where he's from. But now he's looking around saying, how can I maximize, how can I make as much money and get as many wins as possible while I can?
Yeah, and get as much exposure and have himself all over the media like he's doing right now, just to feed his gigantic ego. So that, and that's part of that ego thing is he's today on ESPN at, I think it's like 6 p.m. Pacific time, he's contracted an hour special just for him to make his announcement on where he's going to go.
The thing is, I know everybody is saying, you know, that he's kind of a douche for this, or he's just, you know, he's obnoxious, or it's an ego trip. All of those things true, by the way. But, in a way, you got to admire it. I mean, you got to sort of give it up to a guy who just figures, like, I have got life by the short hairs, and I'm just going to, you know, and I'm going to make the most of that while I possibly can. Because that moment doesn't last forever. No matter who you are, the biggest band, the most talented athlete, the most powerful politician, that moment passes. And even if you remain famous or powerful, your moment at the pinnacle is limited. So that guy just says, look, your balls are in my hand. And so I'm going to do all I can right now.
Well, he's also in the situation, too, where it's like the Cavaliers could sign him for $125 million for 6 years, or he could take less money and sign with Miami for 5 years and get $90 million. And the thing is, when you're in his position, it's like, it's hard for me to imagine just going, wow, I need that extra, you know, $130 million. But the thing is that he's surrounded by agents and managers and entire companies that handle him, and those people get a percentage of how much money he gets paid. So, you know, they're pushing him to take, like, the bigger payday.
Yeah, that's true, too. But if he does go to a team and actually wins, he's going to make so much more money just in endorsements and the fact that he's a champion now, so that can just up his price for everything.
Also, if you're ostensibly the best basketball player that exists, you want to be on a team that doesn't stink.
Well, you don't want to be on a team that's just full of schlubs. And I'm not saying that Cleveland is. I don't know much about it. But the other point that Greg just made is I hadn't really thought about that. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like taking a percentage of your the album sales as opposed to an advance or something, where you're banking on the fact that if the album does really well, you can tour and there's merchandise and there's videos and spinoffs and whatever. And that's kind of what he's going for. All right. So I'm going to have to look further for this video, because I'm unable to rustle it up, because it's funny. Now all I'm getting when I search for this LeBron James video is just blogs about other people searching for it, because it's apparently the best, worst thing. Let me ask you this just final thing. Here, as we get ready to wrap this up, this is Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio, which can be heard every day at funemploymentradio.com. Is this LeBron James video that Cleveland made up, is this video worse than, better than, or as bad as the Scott Stapp Marlins video?
I would say, honestly, I would say as bad as.
Wow.
It's on equal footing with the Scott Stapp Marlin song. It is that bad. And the thing is, it involves so many people. So the Scott Stapp video, that's embarrassing just to watch Scott Stapp. But this is the entire city of Cleveland and whoever their celebrities are, all involved in this in one thing.
Oh, that's glorious. All right. Excellent. Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio, funemploymentradio.com. Thank you, Greg.
You bet.
All right. There you go. Greg Nibbler, ladies and gentlemen. Awesome. All right. All right. Well, now it's a quest. I will not take. A file has been removed for an answer. Yeah, I'm looking at this now, and it's just endless. You know the Scott Stapp video,
yes,
don't you?
Yes. Yes.
The come on, Marlins, and let's play ball. I feel like I got to play that now, just to make up for the fact that I don't have the LeBron James thing. I can't believe that I would actually go out of my way to be playing Scott Stapp sound. But let's do one more, and then we'll do today's. We're so over time, like in a way that is even beyond the pale for this show. Because I spent the first 20 minutes being grumpy and bitching about the phones, and then I spent the next 20 minutes talking about my grumpiness by way of explaining my whole veto problem this morning. And so now we've actually got some news. Let's do one more here, because we got lots of time. We got lots of watches. We got Pop Culture Authority. We got Greatest Songs Ever Made. All this stuff to get through. Let's do one more, and we'll take a break with Pop Culture Authority. This is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
We have a clergy watch.
And I knew you were going to do that.
Sorry about that.
I'm sorry. I just minimized my my watch board to the bottom of the page here. Where did it go? The problem is they're not in alphabetical order the way they were. Okay, here we go. Here is your clergy watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I'm gotta have faith.
Here is Don Taylor with your Clergy Watch for Thursday.
A high-flying Connecticut priest was charged this week with first-degree larceny in the theft of almost $1.3 million from his church's coffers to fund a lavish double life that included swanky hotels and male escorts. Father Kevin Gray, 64, a former pastor at Sacred Heart Church in Waterbury, allegedly embezzled money from the church over the course of 7 years. He used it to pay for fancy restaurants, clothing, vacations, hotels, a New York City apartment, and a male companion's tuition at Harvard University. The affidavit obtained by CNN says that between June 2003 and March 2010, Gray spent about $205,000 at restaurants, $132,000 in hotel stays, and $85,000 in clothing stores. While in New York City, he frequented the Waldorf Astoria, Omni Berkshire, and the W Hotel Times Square, among other posh hotels. He allegedly shopped at retailers including Barney's, Armani, and Saks Fifth Avenue. Along with his expensive taste, Gray allegedly kept company with a number of male escorts and allowed some to have credit cards in their name on his account. One escort, Islagar Labrada, allegedly charged more than $49,000 to the account. The affidavit reads, some items Mr. Labrada charged included a stay at the Sheraton in Buena Vista, Florida, storage facilities, computers, computer software, cell phones, anti-aging creams, artwork, Louis Vuitton stores, a home alarm system, and bicycles.
Jesus, God almighty.
Mr. Labrada also charged $8,864.69 to Crunch Fitness Gym for membership fees. Another man, Wairuri Zhang, told...
may not actually be the pronunciation of the name.
He told police he met Gray in Central Park in 2005, said Gray paid for his rented apartment in New York, a piano, dogs, and his Harvard University tuition since 2008.
It's funny that they don't lead with the fact that put him through Harvard as part of this. Can I just tell you, this is really the difference. And I know that there are female, you know, gold diggers and whatever. That is not a thing confined to one gender. But this is the difference in many ways between men and women. A woman, I think by and large, you would not read this story about an older guy and some chick that he just met in the park.
Yeah.
I mean, that's two guys. That's what that is right there. I mean, can I just tell you, if I could trade all of my alleged talent or whatever skills I have at broadcasting or writing or being amusing, anything, just for being a young, pretty gay man for like 6 months, I could probably make enough money because it doesn't matter to me. I would do, 6 months on your back, that's the rest of your life, on the shores of Maui. So that's fine. I mean, because clearly all you have to do is just find the one guy, if a guy just has a functioning hypothalamus and a bank account, you are set, my friend.
My favorite part is the very end here about this priest who was doing all of these delightful things. The man Zhang, the escort, told authorities that when he pressed Father Gray about why he was always paying him with checks from Sacred Heart Church, Gray told him that he won big cases as an attorney and that he put all his life savings into the church account.
Fantastic. Well done, sir. There you go. He is a man of God. And there's your Clergy Watch for Thursday.
'Cause I gotta have faith.
Fantastic. All right. Coming up in just moments, we have another installment of today's Pop Culture Authority. Will be about Hydrox cookies. Today's Pop Culture Authority answers the question, are Hydrox cookies really just a knockoff of Oreos? Coming up later on, we'll have another installment of the greatest songs ever made. Still to come, Penis Watch on the way. And I will come hell or high water. If it's the last thing I do, I'll find this LeBron James thing.
I actually have it right here. I'm going to send you the link.
All right. So we'll do that on the other side. We'll make people wait just a second for that because now I've queued up the stat thing. So it'll just be back to back genius. Pop Culture Authority on the way. We return here in just a few moments with the LeBron James video. More from Don Taylor at the news desk. And and other amusements. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program right here on the Rick Emerson Show. This is Scott Stapp. Hold on, I'm trying to get this to play. Okay. On the Rick Emerson Show, this is Scott Stapp. You're listening to the Emerson News Network. Back in a few.
Let's play ball, it's game day. We want strikeouts, base hits, double plays. Take the field, hear the roar of the crowd. Come on, Marlins, make us proud. Come on, Marlins, make us proud. Keep hoping and dreaming that you will soar. With a little faith and love, you will soar. One strike, two strikes, swing away. A diving catch, a stolen base, a perfect game, a triple play, another playoff race. Yes, World Series champs will be. Keep hoping and dreaming that you will soar.
Are Hydrox cookies really cheap imitation Oreos?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Dawn Taylor. Let's recall for a moment the halcyon days of childhood. Mom offers you a cookie. Hooray, you say. You see her pull out a package of what looked to be Oreos. Even better. But a moment later, you realize that you've been bamboozled. Those aren't Oreos she's holding. Oh, no. Those are Hydrox cookies, generally considered to be the less tasty, bastard knockoff spawn of the far superior Oreo. The Oreo cookie was first produced by Nabisco in 1912 at its Chelsea factory in New York City. It was designed for British biscuit eaters. Yes, they call cookies biscuits. And the Nabisco folks thought that British cookies were boring. The first Oreo was mound-shaped and available in two flavors, lemon meringue and cream. A second Oreo design was introduced in 1916, and as the cream filling was by far the more popular, Nabisco dumped the lemon meringue flavor in the 1920s. What we now know as the Oreo, imprinted with the Nabisco logo, first hit shelves in 1952. So the Hydrox, that Johnny-come-lately wannabe Oreo, that must have come after that, right? Well, no. Sunshine's Hydrox cookie actually predates the Oreo by 4 years. It was invented in 1908. They were discontinued in 1999 because, let's face it, everyone likes Oreos better. Oh, and despite what we've all grown up believing, there's no lard in the Oreo filling. Not anymore, anyway. They stopped using pork fat in Oreos some time ago. Yet they're still delicious.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority. From the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. So now you know the sordid history. Here's a little secret. I actually knew the Hydrox thing, but only because I happened to see a thing about it on the Food Network where they do that show called Heavyweights. And I don't know if you've ever seen the show Heavyweights. It's one of the best things ever. It's where they take two competing companies, companies that have been rivals for the longest time, and then they give the history of each company and of the rivalry itself. So they've done whole episodes that are like Burger King versus McDonald's. They did one that was Coke versus Pepsi. They have one that is it's like M&M Mars versus Hershey's. And then there was a whole I forget if it was Nabisco versus whatever. It wouldn't have been the Sunshine Company, so it must have just been Oreo and Hydrox. Or it could have actually been various kinds of competing cookies. It might actually have just been a whole cookie special. Because, you know, I got a whole cookie thing anyway. Although, not so much for Oreos. Goddamn, they still taste like they have lard in them, though.
The one way that Hydrox were superior to Oreos, at least when I was a kid, was that Hydrox, you could get mint filling. Hydrox years before Oreo ever did mint Oreos.
Well, and is it?
And they were delicious.
Is it Oreos? In fact, that at one point had the that had some sort of like a banana filling, not Twinkies. I'm thinking of Twinkies, right?
Yeah, Twinkies did a banana filling.
The Twinkies, in fact, originally had a banana filling, and then during the war they switched to cream because bananas were rationed.
Now they have weird. They also have weird backwards Oreos that you can get now, where there's a vanilla cookie on the outside and chocolate filling on the inside.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I say as though you'd have any possible reason for making that up.
There's a ridiculous number of actual Oreo products at this point where they come out with these strange, like, horrible-looking red and green fillings at Christmas time. And there's these straws you can get for your milk that are, like, supposedly the chocolate Oreo cookie crust stuff, but it's just a tubular cookie.
And it will... But how would that even work? Wouldn't it disintegrate?
Eventually, it would get soggy. Yeah, it seems kind of disgusting to me. I'm not six. I've never tried that.
Well, okay. You know, one thing we can all agree on, though, Dawn, regardless of who we might be, there's one thing that brings us all together, and that is this song by Scott Stapp, with which we went into the break there. But how great is this? I mean, right there is when I knew. And I actually have to credit Greg and Sarah for introducing me there, because I was guesting on an episode of – I had the good fortune, actually, if you want to call it that, to when this song first entered the cultural consciousness, at least in our world, I was right there. So before – I didn't even have a chance to get numb to it in advance by having heard about it. Like, I was subjected to it with no warning, which I guess is sort of a benefit. I got to hear it fresh.
What's sad is the song is actually better than most of the rest of his catalog.
There's so much going on here, and I mean, I know this came out some time ago, but the thing is, I've played this probably 10,000 times to myself, to other people, to strangers over the phone, just calling people out of the phone book at night. Listen to this, it's awesome. But I remember I was guesting on Fun Employment, and Greg and Sarah said, "Hey, have you heard the Stapp thing?" And I said, "Scott Stapp?" And I said, "No, I don't know what you're talking about." And they looked at each other with that sort of like, aha, somebody else on whom we can inflict this. And the headline that had accompanied this was, Scott Stapp ruins everything. and who can disagree? And as soon as this opening line came out,
let's play ball, it's game day.
My first belief was that it had been faked somehow, that it wasn't really him, because it sounds... He has done that thing where he has become what we all sound like when we're singing like him drunkenly at karaoke, trying to be like a goof, you know, for our friends. I'll just let this go. I won't play the whole thing again.
Cause... We want strikeouts, fish hits, double plays.
It's like he has some separate set of vowels that the rest of us don't have access to. You know what I mean?
Well, and then it's just the words are so silly.
The brother has to rhyme, I guess, but I mean it's.
He's singing about baseball.
You know, it's like when you're in school and they're telling you the difference between the short and the long pronunciation, and there's the line, or there's the U, or there's a schwa or something. I get the feeling he's got his own whole little alphabet that's up on a wall somewhere.
One of those things, like, it's like, hey, did you hear that Bruce Springsteen song about curling?
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't work.
No, it's...
Take the field, hear the roar on the crowd. Come on, Marlins, make us proud.
The best part about this is that he's so clearly just recording this at home, like standing in his closet. If you look, there's no one else can be seen. There are no other band members that I've been able to spot. It's just him with like his webcam from AOL, like sitting on the desk, and then gesticulating wildly in front of the camera as he cuts back to stock footage that I think he recorded off SportsCenter. There's one more. I think I've pointed this out before, but marlins don't soar. They're fish. Just like FYI. Yeah. With the little faith and love, you will soar. One strike, two strikes, swing away. Here's the best line in the whole thing. A diving catch, a stolen base. Right there, he's not even speaking English. That's not even his mother tongue. He's just started to make open-ended vowel sounds. that really is it. He's just become Peter Boyle at that point. So, Jesus, God Almighty. All right. I'm going to rustle up the LeBron thing, which apparently you were able to locate.
Yes.
In the meantime, in between time, ladies and gentlefolk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, we do have a double penis watch.
Double penis? Wait, is this a watch about a double penis, or is it in fact two watches about single penis?
It's two peni in surprisingly similar stories.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, for Thursday, here is your penis watch.
Take a look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start melting away. Take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Just by the way, for those who are playing the home game, I am I'm queuing up the LeBron thing right now, so that'll be ready here shortly. All right, here's Dawn Taylor with your double penis watch.
A man being booked into jail in Manatee County, Florida.
In Manatee County?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Annetton, Florida. You know, this is the second time, by the way, you have sprung the Florida thing on me when you know that I am occupied with obtaining something.
While the penis song was playing, I held up the paper.
What?
I held up the paper with the word Florida. Damn it. A man being booked into Manatee County Jail for violating his supervised release on a DUI charge was slapped with another charge last week when he failed in his plan to attach contraband drugs to his penis. Jason Graham, 33, of Venice, Florida, was changing into his blue jail uniform on June 30th when a supervising deputy said he heard a rubber band snap as Graham pulled his pants up. A white object with a rubber band attached to it then fell out of his pants. It is apparent that Graham had this package secured around his genital area, and it popped off during the changing of his pants.
Jesus.
The deputy wrote in his arrest report. Inside the package, deputies found blue prescription pills. Graham was arrested on charges of drug trafficking and introduction of contraband into a facility. He was being held at the jail on bonds totaling $50,750.
Well, I mean, you know, let's not say he didn't have a little Yankee ingenuity there.
Picture of him there.
Let me see the...
It's always good to see the mugshot.
I mean, does it say what the contraband drugs were? Because
it's blue pills, which could be...
That could be anything.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, aren't the Viagra?
Yeah.
Is blue. So, but it seems like you probably wouldn't. Jail is a place where, I mean, really all things being equal, you're not going to need that a whole lot.
Never mind.
Well, just as I said this morning, I realized that I had a problem with Viso, that I was officially a junkie when I was rooting around, when I was rooting through, like, soiled clothing from last week, wondering if perhaps a can of Viso had somehow fallen beneath, a pair of penguin underwear that I wear. This might be a tip-off to you that you have some sort of a drug problem. If you find yourself, A, going to jail, B, you need the drugs so badly you got to take them to jail with you, and then you've got to rubber band them to your penis. That, in a place where you know you're going to be searched, and let's be honest, in a place where you know your penis is probably going to be used a time or two, whether you like it or not. So, you know, it might be a time to reconsider some of the choices you're making in your life.
In a completely unrelated story, a man has gone to jail after being caught with marijuana taped to his penis. Kyle Anthony McConnell, a 19-year-old man from Norwalk, Ohio, also had a lighter with him to smoke the drugs. According to the Huron County Sheriff's Office, McConnell was arrested around 4 a.m. Thursday by Vermilion Police after the driver of the car he was in was stopped for a traffic violation. An identification check revealed that McConnell had two pending warrants for his arrest. Investigators say McConnell was transferred to the Huron County Jail, where he was searched during the booking process. During the search, a corrections officer found a lighter and a small amount of marijuana wrapped in paper and taped to his penis. He was charged with possession of marijuana and drug paraphernalia. He could also face charges of conveyance of drugs into a detention facility.
The thing about that, sir, it doesn't make any sense, is I would imagine that of all of the drugs in the world, weed is the easiest thing to get in. How difficult can it be to find a guy to give you a joint when you're in jail?
Well, my problem with this whole story is that the driver of the car he was in was stopped for a traffic violation. They did a check, found he had pending warrants. He was sent to jail. At what point did he tape the marijuana to his penis?
Hey, that's a good question.
Was it already taped before they got pulled over?
You know, what I've realized here is I am really just the Sally to your Encyclopedia Brown. because that is that, because I never would have put that together. That's a good I wonder.
When did he do that? Was this one of those things where he's like, can I use the bathroom before you put me in the van?
Pardon me.
And
I
he ran in there. And where did the tape come from?
Need to tend to my bunions. Give me just a moment. And then just taping it all up.
Yeah.
And he taped a lighter to his penis as well. It seems like that's the sort of thing that is going to work out poorly for him. Wait, that guy blew off part of his thigh because, you know, something, the fire started in his pants inadvertently. So, yeah, and marijuana does seem like... I understand almost why this guy with whatever these pills are, you take that to jail because, jails, you don't want to be the detoxing or withdrawing or something. But it's like, you know, I know that you probably might want to mellow out if you're sitting in cell block 5 or whatever. But it seems like that is where the penalty of smuggling the drugs is way worse than it seems like probably what going without a J for a while it might be. But, you know, what do I know? All right. There's your double penis watch for whatever the hell this is, for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio.
Take a look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a-melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Just me with the microphone on there. Hi.
Hi there.
That was me leaning forward. I just said we have a ton of sound, right?
Yeah.
So let's get some of this done, and then we'll end this segment with the LeBron thing, which I now have queued up before we do greatest songs ever. Because why not go back-to-back the LeBron James song with one of the greatest songs ever made? I mean, really, it's like bringing the quality even just starker relief. Here is Don Taylor.
Mike Irwin from CareerBuilder.com says that the downturn in the economy means that workers may actually be getting healthier. He says that 47% of workers report that they've been packing their lunch more often to eat healthier or help save money, and 44% of workers who smoke said they're more likely to quit smoking given today's economic conditions. In addition, 1 in 5 said they've decreased the number of times they smoke during a workday or have actually quit altogether. The survey was conducted among more than 4,400 workers between May 18th and June 3rd. And I believe we have some sound for this.
Damn.
That wouldn't be it.
That was me. That was my hand going all spastic on me there. Yes. Yes. I believe I just... You know what I just did now? I just deleted that sound.
Okay.
I went to hit the button that was play, and I hit the destroy key instead. I'm sorry. That was me after asking you to play the
noise. There's a destroy key?
There isn't really a destroy key.
There shouldn't be a destroy. That just seems wrong.
I keep meaning to have it removed. It's the darndest
That's
thing.
That's awkward. It's right next to the save button.
It's what is this immolate key doing here? It's right next to the insert key, really. They're sort of the same thing. Anyway, well, let's move. Would it be helpful if I told you the stories on which I had not destroyed the news?
How about the Gulf Oil cleanup one?
No, I've got that. I've got everything except the one you just requested, actually.
All right.
That's fantastic.
As it continues to try and drill in a relief well, BP continues trying to minimize the flow of oil into the Gulf of Mexico. Incident Commander Thad Allen said they're trying to get a new, better containment cap on the leak. This is a fellow that you, Rick Emerson, don't seem to have a lot of faith in. He is in charge of the federal response to the oil crisis and says that the first relief well could intercept the leaking Deepwater Horizon well in 7 to 10 days.
Big question in the next couple of days for us is the weather window to achieve the removal of the current containment cap and put a new top cap on.
And I think he also said we have him estimating the timeline on that.
Certain things that could move that date up, but for right now, my official position is that it'll be the middle of August before this well is capped.
See, and it, I guess it is telling that he says my official position, so he's taking some ownership of it. And he's saying, like, my official position, but he's also just not saying, like, it's going to happen.
No.
He's saying, at this time, my official position is, I mean, it's just full of weasel words, which is fine. The thing about it is, and I'm not trying to be cynical, and I know that during Legion of News we were talking about this, and I, what with my morning and the visa and the pizza and the, you know, everything, the all of the various incidents that combined like aligned planets to make my day so cheerful right out of the gate. It may have sounded as though I was in a bad mood about the oil spill or nature or things or stuff. And it wasn't really – that's not really the case so much as it is that the acknowledgement of the fact that, like, they're really only going to be able to fix this after many, many attempts. And fortunately, we're many attempts into it, so maybe the end is closer than the beginning. But, I mean, you talk about the cat being out of the bag. I mean, what is the best they can possibly hope for now? That industry recovers within, like, 50 years? Because they were talking – I saw an interview with some guy on CNN, and they were – they were talking about the, you know, he was saying that there was like a, maybe he was overstating it, but he says like a whole generation that is going to have to find something else to do for work. Not that.
Yeah, the shrimp have like oil in them.
Yeah.
Now. Even the ones that are surviving, they still have, you know, if they cut them open and they test their little shrimpy intestines, they now have oil in them.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know if oil ever like. I don't think that actually just degrades or something. I mean, it's not like a paper bag that you come back in a week.
Considering we're pumping stuff out of the ground that's been, you know, is
there
the result of millions
of
years
of, you know, and I'm no genius, but trying to solve the oil-water mix probably is not real high in the list of things we're going to be able to do. So it just seems like that, like, you know, it's just done. And also that whoever it is that is ultimately responsible for this will never be held accountable and will never be punished for it.
No.
And so these poor slobs that just got a phone call in the middle of the night from some corporate lawyer saying, hey, by the way, as of now, you're in charge and you never saw me. And then, then those guys are all just gone somewhere. And there's some Ned Ryerson looking guy that's got to stand behind a podium and lie to us. And we all know it's a lie. And it was Scott McClellan. Was that the guy who took over for Ari Fleischer in the Bush White House?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, Ari Fleischer. You know, he would get up there, and he was there in the early days of the Bush presidency. And when I think it was plausible that Saddam Hussein might have had some kind of weaponry, or it was maybe conceivable that he might have had something to do with 9/11. And so when Bush said, like, we're going to go clean house, and Ari Fleischer could sort of, you know, put his fist down and say, you heard Secretary Rumsfeld say, we're declaring war on terrorism, and, you know, we're going to go over, and we're just going to, you know, we're going to expunge all of the bad guys from the neighborhood. And everybody said, all right, let's go. And then he retires and he says, Scott McClellan, your job now.
Well, Ari Fleischer leaves basically with this sort of, under this sort of atmosphere of, even I can't make this sound good.
Right.
And I can't sell this anymore. I quit.
And then he tags Scott McClellan, who then becomes like the coy advance to Ari Fleischer's Bo and Luke Duke. And Scott McClellan has to just stand there behind the podium and like the subtext.
Sweating, his eyes twitching.
And everybody in the room knowing the deal. You know, the subtext is just, look, I'm lying. You're not believing the lie. We're all going to go drink heavily afterward and go weep in our pillows. So let's just get through this as quickly as we can. And I mean, it was just this shared facade that we all engaged in. I mean, and that's kind of what it is with the BP thing. I mean, it sucks. It sucks unbelievably. Oh, but, you know, I've been meaning to play this forever. But, you know, now it's going to suck a little bit less for all the victims of the oil spill down Southway because the benefits have begun. And so now musicians and celebrities of all varieties are on the case. Who is the first person? No, let me rephrase that. Who is the last person that you could imagine they would find to appear on a benefit for all of everything that has gone wrong down Louisiana?
You mean the person least likely to do it?
And I'll give you a hint. It's an actress.
Helen Mirren.
No, but see, that is But that actually is a pretty good guess. It's wrong. Let me see if I can give you another clue here. Let's see. nighttime soap.
Joan Collins.
Close.
I'm out.
Okay. Yes, Victoria Principal.
Oh,
has leapt into the fray. So this is actually a doubly great soundbite because this is, I think, Victoria Principal talking, and then it comes back to just one of those performances that doesn't need to exist. And this is all as part of a benefit for the Gulf spill.
Is ocean. We call it planet Earth, but it's planet ocean.
Oh, and I think this is Deepak Chopra, who seem to find for all of these things. He's like on speed dial. It's like when dead blondes die, they call Elton John. As soon as there's something that's spilled somewhere on something that's furry or lovable, to get me Deepak Chopra. So here he is, talking about Earth chakra or something.
Is ocean. We call it planet Earth, but it's planet ocean. Recycles as our own circulation. What we do to it, we do to ourselves.
Imagine there's no countries.
Imagine there's no sheet music telling you how the song is actually supposed to sound either. Why don't you do that, huh?
Right. Is ocean. We call it planet Earth, but it's planet ocean.
Recycles
as
our
own
circulation.
No. Yes,
what we do to it, we do to ourselves.
No, you'll hear her in a bit.
Okay.
Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do.
People are reaching out from all over the world and saying, that's the one bright spot in this, is we're waking up. We're all connected. We all live on this planet. If this is happening there, it affects all of us because this is our home.
Imagine how
I hate all of these people.
The people live alive.
She didn't even say any words there. That last thing was just a...
Who is that singing?
I do not know, actually. I didn't get a chance to check the Chiron. I was so agog that Victoria Principal was on television talking about how we're all connected to each other. I was scrambling for my recording device. Honey, Victoria Principal's on TV. Where's my recorder? So it was just, yeah, I didn't get a chance that Imagine thing. It just went on forever.
Talk about just an inappropriate, wrong use of that song.
That's just where they're flipping through the book of things the piano player knows. You know, they're just looking through his fake manual. He's like, I got your Sending the Clowns my way. Let's see. Can't Smile Without You. No. Imagine? Okay, imagine it is. All right.
Imagine all the oil-soaked pelicans.
Just no call for that. Well, let's do one more story here, and then we'll get this LeBron James thing playing.
Okay. Taiwanese dentists have urged fast food chains to drop their oversized hamburgers from their menus following a growing number of jaw injury cases. Patients have developed sore jaws or had difficulties opening their mouths after consuming giant burgers, the China Post quoted Professor Su Ming Lung of the School of Dentistry at National Yangming University as saying. Problems can arise when fast food fans tuck into hamburgers larger than 3 inches high, Su said. The human mouth is designed to gape over objects measuring up to 1.5 inches, and overextending can hurt the joint between the jawbone and the temporal bone in front of the ears.
I actually think about this sometimes because, I mean, we've all, purchased an item or you get a sandwich or something, and you think to yourself, my God, how is a man supposed to eat this? And then you wonder if it's if you have an unnaturally small mouth or something. Because you think, well, other people have eaten this item. How is it that they fit it into their mouth?
But how stupid are you that you see something that's, the size of a cantaloupe?
Are you asking me specifically?
And you think, no, I'm in general. And you're just going, well, that's how big the sandwich is. I guess it's my job to open my mouth bigger.
The sandwich doesn't need to adjust to me. Clearly, the mountain needs to go to Muhammad.
Suddenly, you think you're like a snake, and you have to unhinge your jaw and, swallow up an entire water buffalo or something.
Can I just tell you how much easier my life would be if that were true? Because then I could just have my entire meal at once. Because I'm not much of a food guy. There's just foods that I prefer over others. But, I don't... if I could just have a Jetson pill that I took every day, like a plateful of, vitamins that I just, there's my meal, the Wonka gum or something. So if I could just open my mouth and just go and just dump in a barrel of sustenance and then leave the house. That'd be awesome.
But these are people who are actually looking at the sandwich and thinking to themselves, well, obviously the sandwich manufacturer knows more than I do, you know, and they wouldn't have made it this big if I couldn't get my mouth open that far.
Clearly.
So I must do it even if it harms me.
Clearly, it's my failing as a human that I'm not able to open my jaws to a distance of 12 inches. There's a place in San Diego, a place called Hodad's, that serves just some of the great. In fact, that guy you don't like, the Guy Fieri guy, an episode of Diners, Dive-Ins, and Drives went to Hodad's.
I don't like him, but they come up with some great places on that show.
And that's why I watch it. Like, I'll tolerate him to watch that show. And they went to Hodad's, which is just, it is one of my favorite places on earth. And they make the most amazing bacon burger. But the thing is, even like the single, like even if you look at the double, I mean, and thinking about it now, I know that I've eaten dozens of them in my life. But I don't know how, actually. Because I can imagine, I can picture it on the plate. I know approximately how big my mouth is. I don't know how I've managed to eat that. They don't offer any knives or forks there, so I don't know if I've just smashed it down or something, or if I've nibbled it from the underside like a shark attacking James's giant peach. I just don't know how that even works.
There's a chain in the L.A. area in Southern California called Tommy's.
Oh, yeah.
And they do these amazing burgers, and it's really – they're just pretty decent burgers, but they put this baseball-sized scoop of this paste-like chili.
Chili, yeah.
And so you get this thing, and it's massive. But, you know, you don't think to yourself, well, I guess I need to, like, open my mouth like a foot and a half to get it around it.
Let me just tell you. See, now we're doing that thing where I'm all hungry because we're talking about the Hodad's and not Tommy's. I had never gone to Tommy's until I met Lara because I didn't spend a lot of time in California. You know, I was there off and on. But her family, part of her family lived in Burbank until recently, that's always a treat, going to Burbank. I mean, it's like you might as well just beam yourself into the ice cream social room at a nursing home on like a Tuesday.
That the airport in Burbank is just a hellhole, but the thing is, it's so convenient to everything. You go there and you always see like movie stars, except that the place is just a horrible tiny little airport where you have to wait on the tarmac for the airplane and like walk up the steps like in the 50s. It's just horrible.
It's like landing at the airport in Fargo, the airport in Fargo, which closes. They close. The airport shuts for the night. I've lived in some bad small towns. I have never been in a town where they closed the airport. And I know because, and I know they closed the airport because the one time I went to Fargo, where I was huge, there was some miscommunication where I thought I was calling, the guy was coming to pick me up. He thought I was calling him to tell him that I was there. And so I'm just standing at the Fargo airport, you know, waiting to die as he's getting older. And and of course it's like January. It's 500 zillion degrees below zero and there's snow drift up to my eyes. And the janitor is like, you know, brooming along behind me going, well, getting ready to close up. And I said, well, okay, enjoy your night. I'm just going to stand here. He goes, no, we're closing. Get out. You know, he shooed me out essentially onto the sidewalk in the cold black Fargo night. And then literally I saw him go and turn off the lights at the Fargo airport. That's when I made the vow to myself that however big I may be in this town, which where I know we have listeners there, by the way. So hello, people in Fargo. I'm not trying to knock you. You have that Roger Maris Hall of Fame or whatever it is at that strip mall that the guy took me to see. But I'm not going to live there.
You need to say whatever you're going to say about the Tommy Burgers, and then we've got to get to the top five or whatever it is.
So Burbank Airport, Tommy Burger. But we're talking about Tommy Burger here and all of that, and it's just I'm thinking about the – you know what used to be really good and isn't anymore? And I have actually sworn off this place because I have taken people there twice. Saying to myself, no, they'll be different. You know, the last time I was in Aberration was Fat Burger. And I used to be a big fan of Fat Burger, which is an L.A. chain. I don't know if they have it elsewhere, but they have it in L.A. It's in Vegas, I guess. And twice in a row, I have taken people to Fat Burger, and it's been terrible. It's been terrible, and the place has just been a dump. But you ever do that where you were bragging about a chain, especially, which they're predisposed to dislike because people are suspicious of chains. You take them there, and then it's just you just look like a fraud.
On the other hand, In-N-Out remains delightful.
It is that's the gold standard, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get any better than that. All right, and this is all true. Okay, well, so let's play this LeBron thing. And I said I was going to go right into the greatest songs ever made. I probably won't. I'll probably do the LeBron thing, probably come back, talk about what's going to be on tomorrow's show. Then we'll do the greatest songs, because it just seems wrong to just blend one into the other. Plus, I want to be able to comment on this. So this is, what did we discover? This was made by the city council or the people of Cleveland or
something like that. Yeah, I know the mayor is involved in it in some house. It's just some Cleveland people.
So this is the movers and shakers of Cleveland. They made this video to get LeBron James to stay there, which apparently is just that's an exercise of futility. And they gathered all of Cleveland's many celebrities and folk heroes together to perform the song, which I have not heard. So we are all experiencing this together. And I want to thank Greg Nibbler of Fun Employment Radio for hooking us up with this, and then Dawn for actually tracking it down. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the people of Cleveland. By the way, I should just say, then I promise I won't just endlessly stop this, but it even starts with the We Are the World thing, because as it's playing, it says, Cleveland's finest gathered for one purpose.
Was Mike Post involved in this? What
sounds
is the,
like
that?
It. This is so sad. This is already the saddest thing I've ever seen. On the front, it says Clevelanders for LeBron James in the very top of the video here. And then the screen fills up with signatures, none of which can be read. And I suspect none of which would be impressive, even if I could read them. I think that one says Peter Graves. I think that's it. I think we've hit the pinnacle. All right. So then the song continues.
There comes a time.
Oh, God.
When a decision must be made.
Oh, God.
Do you care who any of these people are? Do you want me to narrate
of
this?
Tell us who these people are.
All right. So as we go along, I will give a running commentary. Greg nailed it when he said this is embarrassing for everyone involved. That was a sportscaster named Chuck Sadowski.
There comes a time.
Wow.
When a decision
Chuck Skidowski, alias Big Chuck.
Will the king move on or will
That's a city
he
clerk.
Stay?
A city clerk.
We're helplessly waiting.
A TV lawyer.
As we hold our breath in here, should we renew our tickets for next year?
Just before we get to the hook.
Remember when We Are the World, it was about like actually saving people's lives who were starving to death? And this is, should we renew our tickets for next year?
Will you please accept a few million less to come back and play basketball in our city? Wow. I'll let the hook go by. I was going to try to list off these people, but I'm covering up the genius of the lyrics. So I'll just let it go. I'll let it go uninterrupted. Suffice it to say that the first person was a TV sportscaster. The second person was a city clerk. So that's really where we're at.
Well, if anyone actually famous pops up, let us know.
That's not going to happen. Unless at the end, if they can, like...
You never know.
Drew
somebody...
Carey from Cleveland? I know that the Cleveland rocks him, but isn't that wise because he's from there? Yeah. I know Cheap Trick isn't from there, even though they sang the song. So I got nothing. All right. So I'll just let this go. This is... I don't even want to hear this, but we have to suffer through it together. All right, let's make a vow that we're not going to turn it off.
No,
we're going to. This is like an audio rodeo. We're going to make it all the way through. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the people of Cleveland, get on their knees and grovel like fools to LeBron James. Oh, it burns.
There comes a time when a decision must be made.
Jesus, God.
Will the king move on or will he stay? We're helplessly waiting as we hold our breath in here. Should we renew our tickets for next year? Say, LeBron, we really need you. No bigger market's gonna love you half as much as we do.
It's the choice you're making. Will you go or will
I wish I was dead.
Just tell us, King, what changes we must make. Weary name every street, LeBron, if that's what it takes.
I have to interrupt at this point. Are they auto-tuning something in the middle of Please Stay LeBron? Is that really is it really that important that you need to bust out space-age technology to augment your vocals for this song? All right. We're not even halfway down, by the way. All right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt the middle eight there. All right.
LeBron, if that's what it takes.
The Knicks and Nets are terrible.
I love this show. Oh my God, there's a senator. I don't know.
That was just creepy.
Oh God. Oh.
There is this.
Like, about 30 seconds. By the way, in case you haven't gotten. Sorry, I kind of had it in a loop. Jesus. In case you didn't get the message, by the way, at the end, it just goes to a huge thing that says, Please stay, LeBron. Oh, wow.
God.
Let me just tell you, let me just sum it all up this way. If a guy did this to keep his girlfriend, we'd have him put away. All right? I mean, that's it. I didn't want to keep stopping the song to comment, but I have a couple observations to make. And I will post this in the Rick Emerson archives, by the way, because Rick Emerson cares enough that he makes you suffer along with him. So this will...
I'm sending Cheryl the link so she can put it on the Facebook page.
Awesome. Well done. Yeah, and because they keep removing this everywhere, I'm going to put it in the archive where it will be beyond their stubby grasp. So that'll be up later on today. Few things about this when you watch this video. One, the guy with the raspy voice like this, I guess he must be some famous – he says furniture pitch man. So I'm guessing he's a local, you know, like one of those guys you see on television. He's like a rambling rod guy, but he sells furniture or something. He's a local advertisement guy, an advertiser. Let's see. I'm sorry. Bruce Agler is calling here. Bruce Agler. Hello. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing just fine.
Are you calling?
Wow,
are you calling?
That sounds good.
Are you calling via Skype?
I am calling via Skype. I thought I would try that out.
Here's the thing about Skype. You can call with your regular telephone at 503-505-6964, or if you are also on Skype, we are Rick Emerson Show, and that is almost ISDN quality. That's like an almost like down the hall in a production booth quality. Well done.
Well, this would probably be even better, except I'm just using my iPod Touch and the little Apple headphones that come with it. So if it sounds that good, I'm impressed.
You know, you're a technological show off. Sometimes is what you
okay.
are.
Hey, if you say so.
Are you calling?
I was calling to ask you a question.
Yes.
That was prompted by the LeBron song. Now, if the Trailblazers had come to you and asked if you would participate in such a song to get LeBron to come to Portland, wouldn't you have been part of the group?
Well, probably because I'm an attention hog. I mean, let's not pretend that Rick Emerson is better than anyone else. He's certainly not. I mean, yeah, I would have taken part in that probably. Sure, why not? But that doesn't mean that I would not have on every level been aware of how sad and just skin crawlingly bad it is. Have you watched this video?
No, I'll have to. I've just heard you playing,
dude,
it, but I haven't seen it.
It is genius. So there's a couple observations, and then I want to have you mention this thing about the iPhone. a couple of things. One, so that guy with the gravelly voice, he's a local pitch man of some note. There's a guy in here, sort of a huge fat guy with a cowboy hat. He looks just like, what's his name, Champ Kine, the sportscaster from Anchorman. Looks just like that guy. Also, at one point, they get like their senator to appear on camera in his office, which just sullies all of our democracy. But there's a local radio station involved in this. It's funny you should ask if I would be involved with a Trailblazer song like this. So there's some station, and there's a bunch of DJs there, and you can tell what kind of a radio. You know it's a rock station because one of the DJs is bald but has, like, long gray Gallagher hair in the back. You know, where he's got the whole thinks he's still rocking. So he's got that. And then they cut to his pal, like his sidekick, who is, you know, just some big load in a golf shirt or like a bowling shirt. And you know he's a zany DJ because as soon as he sees the camera on him, he turns and makes like a kooky face. He does like a sort of like, whoa, I'm out of control with his LeBron song. And he mugs right for the camera. So you know exactly what you're dealing with there. This is bad. As Roger Ebert, I think, just said about the Last Airbender, this is bad in every category I can think of, and some categories that do not yet exist. So it's glorious.
Well, that's why we know for sure it came from some loony rock station.
You know that, and you know this was a radio station behind this. This has DJ written all over it. God.
Yeah, it sounds like that's exactly what you would expect.
Jesus, man, it's fantastic. So that's going to be up at the Facebook page for
I guess for RickEmerson.com. Yeah.
Okay, so you go to Facebook.com/RickEmerson, and you can see this video, which is really just a piece of work. I'm glad you called, Bruce, because I needed a buffer between this and the greatest songs ever, and also I know you wanted to talk about an update to the iPhone operating system, which affects how people listen.
Yeah, and of course now it occurs to me that since I'm calling on the iPod Touch, I can't actually go through the steps on my iPod Touch and make sure I've got it right. But
well done.
I do believe I have it well memorized now. If you're an iPhone or iPod Touch user and have been upgraded to iOS 4, or if you've bought the brand new iPhone, which is the iPhone 4, I guess they call it, the instructions that we gave you for listening on the archive don't exactly work quite the same way anymore. And I've had a couple of people email me, one with the new iPhone and one who'd done the upgrade. But it's a fairly simple change. When you go into the archive, you know, just go into the archive as you normally would, and you have to log in, password and all that stuff, and you see the files. And then when you find the show you want to listen to, don't just tap it lightly like you do most things on an iPhone or iPod Touch. You have to actually put your finger on it and press. And hold your finger there. And I guess that must be the equivalent of a double click in computers. I didn't realize.
So it's almost like they've increased the sensitivity or decreased it, as the case may be, of that inadvertent, you know, the accidental touch feature that they're.
Well,
thing they've got
there were other things that you would press and hold for, like, you know, on your main home screen. If you wanted to move your icons around, you would press and hold. And I guess that's how I just ran into this by accident. I just, you know, held my finger down on it too long. So if you press and hold on it. It won't automatically start playing, but then what happens is a little box pops up from the bottom and gives you several choices. And here's where it's critical. One choice says open, and that's not what you want to hit. There's another choice that says open in new window. And so if you tap on that, then it will start playing. And it works really well. Since I've upgraded to iOS 4, my iPod Touch plays those archive files much more reliably, and I've corresponded with at least two Rick Emerson subscribers. One with the new iPhone 4, and he had emailed me and said he was having no luck at all. And when I said to try that, he said, "Now it works perfectly." And he verified that not only did it work with Wi-Fi, but it works with 3G. And he said it even works when he's only on the Edge network, although on the Edge network you have to allow quite a bit longer for it to start downloading the file before it'll start playing.
Awesome. All right. And what I'll do is, and in fact, I see you did send me an email about this.
Yes. So if you'll add that to the instructions and somehow indicate that, you know, if you have the iOS 4, then this, you got to follow the new batch of instructions.
And I should actually say this. I know that, you know, as this is a, you know, as we're sort of plunging headlong into this new way of doing the show, you know, that is similar in some ways, but different in many others to what we've done in the past. That you know, we're sort of learning as we go along, and the technological smoothness of the show and the ways in which you can listen, you know, we're taking that step by step. I should say this, that between the time I went on the air yesterday and between the time we went on the air and the time we ended the show, Bruce Hagler, who you are listening to right now, and then our chief engineer and creator of all magic, Thomas Gill, as well as our good friend Seamus, those guys, you know, Thomas and then Seamus pitching in from Colorado, really got us up and running. Bruce, Thomas, and Seamus, during the time we were on the air Wednesday, exchanged 39 emails about streaming and the different ways to access it and the iPhones and apps and whatever. So, I mean, I don't know how many that is, like, per hour or every whatever minutes, but there were 39 emails that went back and forth between you guys just as we were on the air yesterday. So if people think that we are somehow unaware of a few of the rough patches, technologically speaking, we are not. We are endeavoring to solve those as we speak.
We are working on it. We're definitely endeavoring a way to make listening to the live show easier on mobile devices. We don't have that yet, but we're kicking around some ideas, and eventually we'd like to have apps. That will be the best solution, but that'll take a little time. And one thing that I think we're a little closer to today is having it so that people who want to just be able to subscribe to the archive, so they don't actually have to go in and download each one, but if they want to make it just like a regular podcast, I think we're all a little closer to that. I don't know that we have it exactly all wired out, but Seamus and Thomas have definitely figured out that it can be done. So it's just now a matter of getting it done.
And I am deeply grateful to the three of you for doing it, because just hearing about it makes my head hurt.
Yeah, it breaks your brain even to think about it in not too long. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Hagler. Thank you, Bruce Hagler.
You're welcome. Awesome.
That sounds fantastic. That connection was excellent.
I know.
All right. No, those, I mean, really, and we've talked about this before, and you'll hear this many, many times, in the future, but those guys are just, it's just amazing. The amount of knowledge contained in any one of their heads has more brain power than, like, my whole block.
And I'm not exaggerating either. I mean, really, I start hearing about this stuff, and there's this part of me that thinks I ought to figure out how to understand it.
Yeah.
And then the more I think about it and I try to understand it, I'm like a dog staring at a math equation. It's like my head starts tilting to one side, and I get this pounding headache in the middle of my forehead, and I realize I'm just not smart enough.
The final anecdote about this, I was actually here pretty late last night because we're working on this system where, and we mentioned this yesterday because, we do Legion of News at PDX.fm. And so, long story short, when 1 o'clock rolls around, one of the reasons we don't start right at 1, one of the reasons we start around 1:15 is because I got to restart the server, and so I have to kick everybody off of rickemerson.com, and then they have to log back on, which I don't like doing, and nobody likes having to log back on. I don't want to have to boot everybody off the system. So I was here last night, and we're trying to make it so there's one machine for PDX.fm, Legion of News, and one machine for the Rick Emerson Show, and then nothing ever has to be turned off. And so I was going back, and Thomas was he was doing that creepy great thing, like from Seattle, where I see him moving the mouse. And the notepad program or whatever opens itself and words begin to appear. And he actually – so when I got to the office last night, I said, hey, by the way, I'm going to the office. I'll be at the studio at like 11 o'clock. If you – this is last night. I'm leaving my house. I'll be at the office in a while. If you want to walk me through how to set up these machines, Thomas, then we can be ready to go. And he said, okay. So I get to the studio, and I'm sitting in the office. And then I look over, and this machine to my left, like the screen had been in a sleep mode. The screen turns on. Like, the text pad thing opens, and then the words, I am here, appear on the text pad. And it's like, if you
didn't... It's like War Games.
Seriously, like, if you didn't know it was him, you would have thought that Flynn's Arcade had somehow just transported him directly into the machine. So he walks me through all this stuff, and then I say, great, good night, and he says, great, good night. Actually, we say, okay, thanks, bye. And then he says, NP. And then... I did the most foolish thing. After he was gone, I thought, well, I'll test that myself to make sure that it works. Because, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I'll give it a test. Me, Rick Emerson. And so I test the stream, and I thought, well, it doesn't seem to be functioning properly. That's strange. And so I sent him an email really late, and I said, hey, unless I'm missing something obvious, it doesn't look like it's actually working. So we need to take care of that. I wake up this morning, there's an email from him, and it says, Well, in fact, you are missing something obvious. In fact, da-da-da-da-da. And it was, you know, no malice there. It's just an observation that I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And in fact, the obvious mistakes elude me every time. So there you go. But those guys are, yeah, they are crackerjack. I got off the air yesterday. It was no exact. I went through and I counted. There were 39 emails that went back and forth between the three of those guys yesterday, just trying to figure out things like, how can I listen live on my droid? So understand that we are aware of that, and I don't take your 30. And I always joke about the 32 cents, but I mean, that's, you know, it means a lot that people are willing to subscribe and willing to, you know, to support the show. So we're working on all that stuff right now. It means enough that I won't subject you to the LeBron song right now. So you are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. What we're going to do is we will segue here in just one moment to the greatest songs ever made. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk to Adam Roscoe of Trek in the Park. Yeah. And which you have you seen Trek in the Park? Have you actually seen it performed?
I have not. But Mr. Fatboy Roberts and I, who do Ham-Fisted Radio on Wednesdays, we were talking about it yesterday because he is in Trek in the Park this time.
I didn't know that.
He is. He plays, I don't know who he plays, but he plays the guy who actually flies the ship. So it's the Star Trek episode Space Seed. I know that much. And yeah, and Fatboy Roberts is a cast member.
What do you mean the guy who flies the ship?
I guess there's a guy who flies the Starship, who flies the Enterprise. He's the guy.
Isn't that Sulu?
Apparently not in this episode. There's somebody else who flies the...
All right.
You'd have to ask Fatboy.
The thing is, I have a layman's knowledge of Star Trek, maybe a little bit more. I'm sorry. I'm just going to stop here because here's the thing. I'm just going to play this because I know the answer will appear on the tech box.
Well, someone said, yeah, not Sulu or Chekhov. It was a special Italian guy.
That counts as an answer. There you go. See? How well do I know this audience? Fantastic. All right. So that's coming up tomorrow on The Rick Emerson Show. I say from inside a gay European rave. Greatest songs ever made coming up in like 10 seconds. Don't go anywhere. We will return momentarily to wrap everything up. You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show on the Emerson News Network. Time for another exciting installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made. 1 minute and 9 seconds. That's the mark you need to listen for in this song. 1 minute and 9 seconds into this song. At that moment, at 1 minute and 9 seconds, there's a sort of musical watershed, a cultural tide that finally breaks through and lets in all the rushing armies of exuberance, revelation, unabashed, jubilant exultation, and sex, of course. It's always about sex, or some combination of sex, repression, confusion, unhinged manic energy. That's what some people have in abundance. It's what adults all too often renounce, and it's what Little Richard manages to convey with absolute crystal clarity in the nonstop, overwhelming assault that permeates today's song. Released in 1958, the song stole its piano intro from Rocket 88 by the one and only Ike Turner and paired it to lyrics by John Mariscalo and Robert Blackwell. But it was the voice, it was the unholy delivery that made this song famous. No one, not Chuck Berry, not John Lennon, no one, in fact, until Bon Scott probably, put so much into every raspy, gravelly nanosecond. And no one, ever, before or since, made it seem as though you were listening to a very, very real, somewhat crazy, bordering on the brink of chaos, externalized human id in a mixture of salvation and sin. And the voice came from an artist just as layered, textured, confused, and unbelievably manic. Born in Macon, Georgia in 1932, Richard Penniman battled poverty, racism, and conflicted feelings about God, a struggle for fame, and his own long-repressed homosexuality. All of this, the sexual struggle, racial strife, hungry desire for material wealth, and the fear of biblical damnation that seemed to be an omnipresent threat, created a crazed persona that could scarcely be contained by the limits of the singer's voice, much less the grooves in the vinyl. And that vinyl held such a song. Years later, John Lennon would describe the scream that happened at the 1 minute 9 second mark. He said, "It made your hair stand on end." And in that moment, though you didn't want to admit it, even to yourself, Elvis had been pushed aside. But that shriek at 1 minute and 9 seconds is only part of the story. The rest is told by pounding propulsive piano, a groove so large that it single-handedly inspired no less than James Brown to enter the music business, and lyrics so direct, they still have the power to shock There was no mystery what this song is about. It was almost certain that the female described in this tale didn't have traditional sporting activities on her mind. So, close your eyes and send yourself back more than 50 years to a time of repression and of stifling blandness, to a time when a young John Lennon sat motionless by the radio, transfixed. One of the greatest songs ever made. This is Little Richard and Good Golly, Miss Molly. Emerson Radio Program. There you go. One of the greatest songs ever made. Little Richard and Good Golly, Miss Molly. God damn, what a great song that is. And
it is.
I can go on and on, and in fact did just go on and on. But let me just allow me, if you will, to go on just about two more things. One, something I never noticed until like the thousandth time that I'd heard that, because it's so easy to view him as just such a cliche, a caricature.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, sort of, you know, he's such a larger than life guy anyway. But it's something I never noticed until I'd heard that song, you know, for years and years and years, is that in the second verse, he's talking about how he has to keep Miss Molly a secret because if he doesn't, his dad will, in fact, go F her himself. He said, Mom and Papa told me, son, you better watch yourself. If they knew about Miss Molly, I'd have to watch my pop myself. Which is, it's like if my dad met my girlfriend, he would surely nail her because that's how hot she is, which is awesome. And the fact that in 1956 that he was able to, I mean, really, in 1956 that a black man was able to get on the radio and say, good golly, Miss Molly sure likes to ball.
Well, I've always wondered, because I know that in a lot of the songs from the 50s, ball was used as a phrase for like going out and dancing, and I wonder at what point
even
it
as
became
double entendre though
a euphemism for that, if that came after those songs or if it was always used
well
for that, I don't know
who knows. I mean, it might, you know, that it might be a thing. I, you know, like rock and roll was, rock and roll was a slang term for premarital sex, but it was unknown in the white community. I mean, that was, the black community had used the phrase rock and roll to describe, you know, the sexing without the benefit of matrimony. And then it was Alan Freed who heard that, you know, because he was a guy who was very steeped in R&B culture. And he heard that, and via his radio show, he interjected. He's coined with creating the term rock and roll. He didn't. What he did is, this is very telling, by the way, and I'm, you know, and... Well, whatever. Anyway, it's a longer story than we have time for, but it's very telling that he is credited with creating the phrase rock and roll, and what that really means is he made white people aware of it.
Yeah.
I suspect it may be the same with ball, where You know, Bobby Sue and Mary Jane heard it and they went, "Aha, she's going out and kicking up her heels. A true Gibson girl," you know, or whatever. Whereas I think to our ears now, and probably to many ears then, it seemed pretty clear what he meant. And yeah. I am amazed, though, that even as it had to have been a double entendre, though, at that point. I mean, at least, I mean, the idea that she likes, that a girl likes to ball, I cannot imagine that there wasn't somebody somewhere going, "Wait a minute, I think I've cracked the code." It's just freaking fantastic. I mean, just the best thing ever. So there you go. And so forth. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We want to thank you all for joining us today. That brings the end to another exciting installment of this. So coming up tomorrow, Adam Roscoe from Trek in the Park will join us, and we'll talk about that, which I think the opening night is Saturday. I don't think it opens on Friday. I think it actually opens on Saturday.
Yes, Saturday.
But we'll talk to Adam about that. We'll also be launching another feature on the Rick Emerson Show tomorrow. Don Taylor's – wait, are we allowed to call it what we were going to call it?
I never quite figured out exactly what we were going to call it.
Well,
so.
Then for now we're calling it Don Taylor's Triple Feature.
Yes.
It will be a collection of three films that may not seem to be the same kind of thing, but which are in fact joined by a common theme and which you may not have been exposed to previously. So it will be effectively three film recommendations joined together by an overarching theme.
Yes.
And so that will be launching tomorrow. Don Taylor's Triple Feature. That is tomorrow on the Rick Emerson radio program. We want to thank our guests, Greg Nibbler of FunEmploymentRadio.com and Bruce Agler, and all his instructions for listening on the new iPhone and the iPhone upgrade. And the iTouch upgrade. That'll all be at rickemerson.com and the Facebook page as well. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, our executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Thursday, July 8th, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Don't forget, keep listening because The Rick Emerson Show continues in best of an encore form next. The stream now 24/7. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.